to the Mazama Pocket Gopher discussion. They've been very patient. And Hannah, if you're still there, we're ready for you. Sorry for the delay, but there's business to do here.
Lots of things to accomplish, I understand. Thank you, Chair Carpenter, Vice Chair Baker, Director Suswin, Deputy Director Windrop. I'm Hannah Anderson. I'm the Diversity Division Manager in the Wildlife Program. And I'm here with my colleague, Derek Stinson, biologist in our program. And we're here to talk about Mazama Pocket Gopher. I'm going to turn it over to Derek here in a minute, but I just wanted to make a couple remarks. We're bringing before you today a joint product, a joint document, a periodic status review in which we'll make a recommendation for the listing status for the Mazama Pocket Gopher, and also a recovery plan. And I'm very proud to bring you a strategy for recovery that sets very clear objectives and identifies actions to achieve recovery so that soon, hopefully, we can bring before you a recommendation to downlist and even delist. This strategy sets us down that path. We did present to you last commission meeting, and so the information that we're presenting today is largely duplicative, but we do have the opportunity for public comment this time, and then we'll ask for a decision at a subsequent meeting. And with that, I will turn it to Derek. Derek, would you like me to share my screen, or are you ready to share yours?
I think I can share mine. Okay. Can everybody see that?
Yeah.
No.
No?
Not yet. Mm-mm.
See it yet?
Nope.
Why don't I give it a shot, Derek, and see if we can get it in works. How about that?
Yeah, I can see that now.
Let me know when you're ready for me to click.
Okay. Good afternoon, and you can advance. Next slide. Next slide. So the Mazama Pocket Gopher resides on grasslands and prairies of western Washington. It's a subterranean rodent, so we often just see the dirt mounds that they produce. They have recurved claws on their front paws, and they dig like a dog, and they were able to do somersaults in their tunnels so they can turn around and push the dirt out. A lot of researchers consider them to be a keystone species or ecosystem engineers because of the effect their presence has on the diversity of plants and the soil fertility, and their burrows are used by a wide variety of other species, including reptiles and small mammals and insects and amphibians, including the western toad, which is another state candidate species. Okay, next slide. Next. The gopher was historically an inhabitant of the prairies. You can see the rough correlation between the historic prairie from the soil in the map on the right and the gopher occurrences. Historically, there were 8 subspecies in Washington. There are now 6. There were extinctions in the Tacoma area and another small relic population down in Wakayakum County. 5 of those 6 live on the South Puget Prairie landscape, and 1 lives on alpine grasslands in the Olympic Mountains. Next slide. So species was listed, state listed as threatened in 2006. In 2014, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided to list the four subspecies found in Thurston and Pierce counties under the federal ESA. Next slide. Kind of complicated slide here, but it's trying to convey the habitat loss, which was a major threat that resulted in their listing. The slide shows prairie soils, gravelly prairie soils in orange, and sandy prairie soils in brown, and the brown soil probably supports higher numbers of gophers, and you can see that much of that brown soil is now in the urban growth areas of Lacey and Tumwater, and that's an indicator of development of lots of the historic prairie. In fact, over 90% of the prairie has been lost or converted to other uses, and that habitat loss and fragmentation has introduced other mortality factors such as roads and domestic pets, and all the prairies are subject to invasion by exotic vegetation, particularly scotch broom. Next slide. So against that sort of pessimistic background, there's been a concerted conservation effort by multiple partners for protecting and restoring prairies. Included in that has been a significant survey or research effort that has involved topics such as survey methodology development, gopher genetics, prairie restoration, the effect of prescribed burns, and so on. And there's has been a strong and longstanding partnerships with Center for Natural Lands Management, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, NRCS, et cetera. Next slide. This cooperative effort that's been going on for over 20 years has really helped facilitate recovery planning. And so we have a draft recovery plan with the goal of securing self-sustaining populations on of all the distinct genetic groups, with the kind of rule of thumb of representation, redundancy, and resilience. Next slide. So I mentioned genetic research. Several years ago, we undertook a genetic analysis, and my hope at that time was that it would confirm earlier genetic work by University of Washington that suggested that all the subspecies in Thurston and Pierce County could be combined under one subspecific name. Unfortunately, that was not the result, and in fact, it confirmed the genetic uniqueness of the subspecies and found additional genetic groups. So this map depicts the seven geographic areas where those unique genetic groups are found. Next slide. In addition to the genetic work, we did some population modeling, and that modeling suggested that populations of at least 1,000 gophers have a 98% probability of persistence for 50 years. Additionally, our observation suggests that the typical density is 5 to 10 gophers per acre, depending on soil and habitat quality. Additionally, published research and our own observations indicate that gophers, as well as other species, typically occupy only a portion of the suitable habitat at any particular time. And in the case of gophers, I think what's going on there is that they are eating all the preferred plants and then shifting their territories in response. And so over time, the occupied area shifts around the landscape. And our assumption was that 40% of the suitable habitat would be occupied at any time. And so those populations might require 250 to 500 acres. The vein of redundancy, it's desirable to have more than one population to represent each of these genetic groups. Next slide. So the reserves needed to support these populations would be take on one of two characterizations. One would be the case where there is a large parcel of conservation lands available, and we've called that a core. Where that is not the case, then smaller parcels would need to be aggregated into a complex and connected by what we have called protected matrix. And next slide. And this protected matrix could be multi-use public land, such as airports or parks, or private rural residential lands or low-intensity agriculture that's protected by easements or management agreements, and would have management that was compatible with gopher dispersal and some degree of occupancy. Next slide. So our recovery objective for downlisting is that each of these reserves in five of the seven recovery areas would support the needed populations, and the objective to delist completely would be that all seven of those recovery areas would have the needed populations for a period of 20 years. Next slide. So this indicates the number of desired reserves for downlisting and delisting of the seven genetic groups listed on the left. The difference in numbers has to do with what's possible on the landscape as a result of just the arrangement of prairie soils. And also a couple of the larger prairies are now bisected by I-5, and so there's a need to have populations on both sides, assuming that I-5 completely eliminates connectivity. Next slide. So the good news is that some of these reserves really already exist in the form of wildlife areas such as Scatter Creek, and also designated priority habitat by Joint Base Lewis-McChord through agreement with Fish and Wildlife Service. So we have started down the road towards the downlist objective. Have made some progress. However, we're not there, and certainly habitat is still threatened by development. And in fact, it's predicted that Washington will have 2 million additional residents, human residents, in the next 20 years. So we're not there yet. Next slide. So our recommendation is that the Mazama pocket gopher retain its threatened status. Evidently, the Mazama pocket gopher isn't the most popular species that we've listed because 11.5 of the public comments did not support listing or spending any money on recovery actions, but 5.5 did support listing and recovery. Now we'll take questions. Next slide.
Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up.
Hi, thanks. Thanks, Derek. Always interesting presentations. And clearly, you know, burrowing rodents, unpopular but really important keystone species, as you point out in your presentation. There are a suite of T&E species that rely on this similar habitat. In fact, the initial status report covered Taylor's checker spot and streaked hornlark. We've looked at streaked hornlark fairly recently. We're also looking at and probably adding the Oregon Vesper Sparrow, all kind of overlapping habitat. So my question is the pocket gopher also an umbrella species? And by doing these recovery activities, are we going to be helping in any way those other species?
I guess the short answer is yes. Certainly, habitat preserved for one often is suitable for another and would be available either the species are already there or it might be available for a reintroduction. The habitat needs of those three species that you mentioned is like a Venn diagram where they overlap but not perfectly. For one thing, the streaked hornlark requires very large sites and hasn't been detected on sites smaller than like 300 acres. So it's not going to be found on any other smaller satellite sites. But there are, as you mentioned, there are other prairie species that are not listed and might be considered for listing in the future. There's several, you know, prairie associated butterflies and so on. So you make a very good point.
Go ahead, Kim, and then I have Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Baker with their hands up.
I think that was me.
I'm done. Derek answered my question. I think that was Hannah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Hannah. Did you want to speak to that?
Well, I was just going to add that certainly we would capitalize on opportunities to protect places that are protected from Ensemma pocket gopher to enhance habitats for others so that we can overlap our conservation.
Absolutely, yeah.
Our limited conservation resources.
Okay, Don and then Barbara, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question or two on getting straight in my mind what exactly the commission decision means here and what we're going to be what we'd be approving in August 21st, I guess. So the recommendations said, could you click back to the recommendation, says retain threatened status or something like that. And so I don't see anything here on what it means to keep that. In terms of a regulatory action, does it mean that every private landowner would have to get a permit to make any take or no takes at all would be allowed? I didn't see anything here on what it meant in terms of a risk analysis that whatever exactly is being proposed would work or might not work. And a 20-year recovery threshold, regardless of how successful the recovery program is, means they would continue to be listed for 20 years, no matter what. But I guess my biggest question is, what is the staff recommending the commission adopt by going approving this retained threatened status to day-to-day operations for people on private land or our state-owned lands or for any of that?
I'll take that one. Commissioner McIsaac, so the decision before you is about the status recommendation. So every 5 years we bring the do a review of each species and bring before a recommendation on whether it should be maintain its status, uplist, downlist, or even delist. The recommendation is to maintain the current status. There would not be a change in any of the ways that it's handled now. All listed species become priority habitats and species, which is the mechanism that informs counties and cities and jurisdictions in their growth management act decisions, their land use decisions. And so our sort of regulatory influence is in that vein. We don't, it isn't direct, although there are, there is limitation on take of endangered, threatened, and sensitive species, but it won't, the recommendation doesn't change anything today.
So does that mean that if someone bought some property in one of these areas, that they would not be able to, you feed this into the local land planning exercises that get to approval of, would a person not be able to build a house on land they bought, or would they be able to?
Not because of our regulations. The federal, the ESA limitations require, would then cue a negotiation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So there would be that consultation. But no, it wouldn't likely not stop anything.
It would mean we would want them to consider this, the county to consider this in their approval process, but it would not be a hard and fast no.
That's right.
No driveway, no house, or anything like that.
Right. And actually, for the listed gophers, the federally right. listed gophers in Thurston and Pierce County, the Fish and Wildlife Service has provided some exceptions to their take prohibitions on things like driveways and some and agriculture and weed management and airport wildlife hazard management and some small structures on properties. And so some of them are an instant sort of go, and others would cue a negotiation process with them.
Okay.
Thank you, Hannah. Commissioner Baker.
Well, Don sort of had my question, but I have another question to ask after that response. There's large areas of Thurston and Pierce County that are gopher land. And for instance, if somebody has a house for sale in the South County, one of the first questions that's asked is, this is gopher land? And then the price of the house is adjusted accordingly. So since there is that land use overlap on these places, do we get conservation credit in terms of rehabilitating the species or recovering the species for that? Or are we only looking at these reserves?
I think what you're asking, Commissioner Baker, or if I understand you correctly, is about when mitigation occurs through somebody develops and then some mitigation set asides happen, do we then sort of count those in our recovery objectives? Is that a fair restatement?
Well, maybe we should talk about this offline. The question that I have is similar to Don's question. If I owned a house in gopher country and I asked to put up a shed and I was told no, is that, do we somehow get to say that we're recovering more gophers for me not putting up my shed or the school sidewalk or whatever is the land use regulations are requiring? The background of my question is that this little critter is a perfect example of something that I really support, which is trying to recover an animal and then us trying to, us requiring habitat for that animal. That's what this is. We have no other way to recover a pocket gopher unless we give it habitat or allow it to have habitat. So my question is, in areas that are not these reserves or set-asides that you're talking about specifically, where actions are being taken that would benefit the gopher, is Fish and Wildlife paying attention to that, or is that just the feds?
I mean, I don't think we're tracking it at that fine of a scale, but certainly we're tracking sort of the macro development. I live on gopher country. I have gophers on my property, but I don't yet have a conservation agreement or something that puts it into some sort of lasting strategy that we would count towards recovery, but we certainly look at the bigger picture of what is developed and what isn't, and can take that into account, but not in this in our framework of reserves and satellites and connected protected matrix. We're really looking for those places that can provide that assurance, that perpetual assurance, that we can count on those to be there for the gophers for many years so that they can persist through time.
Thank you, Hannah.
Okay. Don, do you have your hand up again, or is that a mirage?
No, it's been corrected, Mr. Chairman. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Are there any other questions for staff? Hearing none. Nikki, do you want to tell me where we are with the public comment?
Sure. Okay, it's time for public comment. If you are interested in giving any feedback, please either raise your hand by hovering over your name or pressing *9. All right. Okay, so far we've got 3. I'll start with Helen, followed by Sherry. Go ahead, Helen.
Okay, sorry, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Oh, great. Yeah, I want to speak. I wasn't planning to give public comment, but when I saw that you didn't get many and that there were more comments against the gopher than for it, in a sense, I just wanted to make sure I can check in. I live in Olympia, and I'm concerned about the loss of habitat. There is actually a lot of support for the gopher. There's a lot, because it is well recognized that it is an important species for our highly valued native prairie. And there is recognition of how endangered that prairie is. And there's a lot of concern now about not only residential construction, but we're having growing pressure in Thurston County with warehouse construction as well. And quite often, the warehouses are putting pressure on this prairie habitat and on this Mazama pocket gopher habitat in particular. We in fact just had a situation where the Port of Olympia has decided to lease out some, or at least hopes to be able to lease out property for warehousing that is right in the heart of prime bush prairie habitat. And so it's really important to a lot of us to continue this status and have this kind of leverage to help protect our native prairie. Thank you.
Any questions of Helen from the commission? Hearing none. Helen, thank you for your comments. Nikki?
Let's see. Next we have Sherry and then Jeffrey. Sherry, can you give us your last name for the record?
Are you hearing me?
We are. You're a little soft.
Okay. I'll try to speak up. My last name is Buckner, B-U-C-K-N-E-R.
Thank you.
Yes. And I just wanted to briefly say that I support the gopher remaining as a threatened species with that status. I also live kind of on quote-unquote gopher territory. And during the last very briefly few months, I've really noticed an uptake in various kinds of development, and I'm really concerned about what's going to happen with a lot of species, including the gopher, but also birds. I'm noticing some real changes in birds and their decline where I live. Anyway, I just briefly wanted to support the recommendation of the staff, and that was about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherry, for your comments. Next, Nikki?
Next, we have Jeffrey, followed by Craig.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jeffrey. Make sure to unmute yourself. Go ahead, Jeffrey. You have him unmuted. Well, I'll mute Jeffrey and come back. Let's see. Up next, we got Craig. Go ahead, Craig.
Hello. I'm Craig Foster here, and I just want to mention that I'm a trustee first of property within the Pocket Gopher area that is fully wooded. And so when you're considering restrictions on this entire area, you have to consider that not the entire area is gopher habitat. This property is probably 90% trees and vegetation, and the protocols for doing an inspection couldn't even be followed on this property. So just remember that there are, when these properties are being devalued and restricted, whereas they pose no threat to the gopher. So that's all I'd like to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate it. Any questions of Craig? Okay, thank you. Next.
Okay, we got Jeffrey figured out. Okay, go ahead, Jeffrey.
Hey, thank you very much. Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
My thanks to the commissioners, and hello to Hannah and Derek from Jeff Swotek, who's just retired about 6 months ago. I've had the pleasure of working with those two and several of the staff there at WDFW for almost 30 years. My question is, I reviewed the draft plan, and there are several comments that I have on the draft plan that could make it better. Is that possible to provide that input? And how should I do that? So it's kind of a question.
Hannah, do you want to take that?
Sure. Jeff, why don't you send us an email and with your input?
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And that concludes my testimony.
Thanks for calling in, Jeff. Is that it, Nikki?
Yeah, let's ask one more time. If anybody would like to give comment, please raise your hand or dial *9.
Going.
All right. I think that's good.
Very good. Good job,